In old school games, life is cheap. In old school games, life is cheap. Don't be a dope, bring a torch or a rope, or you might go down in a heap. You might go down in a heap.
Hey Rob, just finished listening to your Gary's Appendix issue 3 review. You know, talk about the snow and your Camaro getting covered. In, I don't know, 94, or maybe it was the winter of 94, 95, but I was out at Fort Lewis, and there was a snowstorm out there, which is kind of unusual, and I remember driving. I was staying with some friends over in Puyallup and driving to base to Fort Lewis, and so I was coming, was that 512, I think, to take to the 5? I don't remember now, but anyway, whatever road that was. But I was driving, and I had a 77 Camaro, just 305 in it. And I remember having that thing and hitting black ice there on the highway and friggin' spinning around on the highway and seeing a semi-truck kind of swerve and try not to hit me. And, yeah, that was interesting times. Obviously, all worked out well in that case. But, yeah. Anyway, just reminded me of that memory. I had some good memories of that car. We high-centered it on a wall one time accidentally. They had where the driveway came to the along the side of the house, and then it dropped down for the backyard, and it kind of went too far forward and dropped to there, and we had to lift it up and get it up. That was fun. One guy, buddy, Dane, was a big, strong guy. It pretty much lifted it up by himself to get it off there. That was interesting. But, yeah. Interesting times. Anyway, great episode. That sounds like great magazine scene. I just picked up 3 issues of The Twisted Stare. I think that's the right name of it. And I haven't really dug into it yet, but it's a zine from 2017. An old school OSR zine. I'm looking forward to diving into that. So, to keep things on topic. But, yeah, keep up the great work, and I will talk to you soon.
Yo, Rob, just getting into your latest episode, and you're talking about the blizzard of 91, and you mentioned your car was buried under the snow, but I was just wondering, what kind of car did you say you got?
I've got a bitchin' Camaro.
Yeah, dude, that's awesome. You rocked a Camaro, man. That can't... I'm just imagining you in 91 rolling around with a Camaro. It's getting me pumped up right now. Anyway, dude, just wanted to say hello. And yeah, take it easy, man. Peace out.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Down in a Heap podcast. I'm your host, Rob, podcasting to you live from beautiful Northeast Minneapolis. At the top of the show, you heard from Jason from Nerds RPG Variety Cast and Joe Richter from the Hindsightless podcast. Both calling in about my Camaro, my bitchin' Camaro. And that particular bitchin' Camaro was a 79 Berlinetta, so it had a 305 in it. It also was an automatic. So you might say I had kind of a wimpy Camaro. It was brown, probably not factory color, tan, kind of soft top, tan interior. I did really like that car. It was one of the, it was really my first real car, and it was the last car I ever really worked on because, well, in part because I was poor, so I didn't have the money to pay anyone to do it, but also because it was easy. It was a simple car, and there was so much room under the hood. I could almost, like, climb in and close the hood behind me. There was so much room to work. And all the cars I've had since then, they've all been Hondas. It's so packed tight in there, you can hardly get a wrench in there, let alone all the other, you know, doodads and stuff that, I don't know, I just don't mess around with them anymore. Anyway, it also got me thinking about the Halloween blizzard of 91. And that was nutso. It wasn't so bad, Halloween in particular, although it started out as kind of an ice storm. So, you know, getting a layer of ice and then having 8 inches of snow drop on top of it would have been bad enough. But then there was another 20 inches of snow that accumulated over the next day or two. So it was like, yeah, it was. I looked on Wikipedia and well, at the airport in the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, it was 28.8 inches for the storm. Duluth, incidentally, had over 36 inches of snow. And it was blowing, and it was super cold. And by the time, you know, the plows got out and stuff, it was like driving around on washboards for weeks after that, because it was so cold, the chemicals didn't really react well to try and remove the ice, and they had so much to do that, but, you know, to get to the side streets, it took forever to treat anything. So you're walking around, or driving around just rumbling when you're going down the street. So it impacted the area for a long time. And unlike most winter seasons in Minnesota, where you'll get a few storms that roll through, but then you'll have periods of warmth that will all melt. So you go back and forth from snow cover to brown. And it's not unusual even to have a brown Christmas around here either. You know, snow is more likely, but it's not that unusual to have a brown Christmas. But it was never, I mean, that was it. It was just snow until middle of March that year. So it was a long winter and a hard way to start out with. And actually, like 20 people in Minnesota died during that storm, too. Most of them probably having heart attacks from shoveling snow and stuff. But I think there were probably some wrecks and stuff, too. Anyway, and yeah, Jason, that Camaro was terrible in the snow. It was the most impractical vehicle I've ever had. I did a near 360 going on, taking an off ramp one time in the snow with that too. And by the time, well, I don't know, around 91, it was a real low rider. The springs were kind of going out in the back. So it was like a snow plow too. I mean, you got over like 4 or 5 inches of snow and you're pushing snow in that car. So it was, and rear wheel drive, of course, it was just a terrible car for snow. It was heavy. I guess that's the only benefit it had in a wide wheelbase or whatever. But, yeah, I did like that car though. What else? Oh, you mentioned, that zine. What was it? Twisted Stare. I'll have to check that out. So, but I don't think anyone tuned in to listen to me yammer about the 91 Blizzard or my bitchin' Camaro. So let's move on to some game topics. Jason called in too with a long response to my idea of using the Into the Odd combat system in my like classic BX OSE game, trying to kind of amalgamate the two into some kind of Frankenstein's monster. So take it away, Jason. Let's hear what you have to say. And depending on how long it takes me to respond to this call, I'll maybe have a play test here afterwards. Oh, I forgot to say, at the very top of the show, you heard John from Tale of the Manticore podcast doing my theme song. So thanks a lot for that, John. And I just want to say thanks to both Jason and Joe for calling in. It was nice to hear from someone besides, not that I don't appreciate Jason's calls at all, but man, I don't get any calls anymore. I got to get back on Discord, I guess, because no one's really leaving me messages on email except Jason and this one from Joe. I've got like a ridiculous, I think it's like 150 notifications on Discord. And I'm sure at least half of those are just like things that, you know, someone does a text out to everyone on the Discord, and they're not all from the Audio Dungeon Discord, but my God, if I've got 150 mentions, I don't know. Sorry, guys. I've tried many times, and it's not working, so I kind of gave up.
Hey, Rob, Jason here. Listen to your latest episode, Into the Box, I guess. Very interesting. So, I don't know about Into the Odd or games that have come and built on Into the Odd. I can talk a little bit about some games that occurred prior to Into the Odd. So, if we go way back in our time machine, if Mr. Peabody lets us use it, and go back to 1975, what we find is Tunnels and Trolls, the second, arguably the second fantasy role-playing game. We can argue whether Tecmo was or not, because it kind of uses D&D. But anyway, point is, Tunnels and Trolls is one of the earliest role-playing games, period. Tunnels and Trolls, you don't have an attack roll. You do for missile weapons, but for melee combat, you are going to hit. Now, the two sides roll, and the higher side wins, and the lower side takes the damage, the difference in damage. In the years, there have been modifications of the rules. Now they have a thing called spite damage, where some of that damage will still get through even to the winning side. But Tunnels and Trolls, because it also has armor that, you know, takes hits away, it reduces the amount of damage you take, like you're saying. So Tunnels and Trolls, way back in 75, this was happening, kind of what you're talking about here a little bit. Not exactly. But again, in Tunnels and Trolls, your hit points, your constitution, right? So, or it was strength. Anyway, point is, you know, damage came off your tributes. So, these aren't new ideas by any means. This isn't, you know, people have been noodling with this and playing with these different variations for, you know, 50 years. But Tunnels and Trolls, we look at that, and that does a lot of this kind of thing. One of the issues with Tunnel Trolls is monsters, their monster rating, their hit points, is also their attack value. So they have a big-time death spiral. And that, the same thing for your character to some degree, but not as much. But Tunnels and Trolls has a very definite death spiral where when one side starts losing, they really start losing. Now let's fast forward to 1983-84, and we see Palladium Fantasy. Palladium Fantasy is, without a doubt, Kevin Sabita, the guy who came up with Palladium's books, it's his house rules for AD&D, no question about it. And when we look at Palladium Fantasy, what we see are armor that makes you harder to hit, and to some degree absorbs damage. Because in Palladium Fantasy, your base attack roll for melee is a 4. So you're rolling a d20, as long as you roll 5 or higher, you hit. So there's always a chance to miss, but you're almost always going to hit. Now, but as armor class, effectively ascending armor class. So if you roll between a five, and the armor class value, your damage goes directly to the armor, and the armor has a certain amount of points. So you can beat. They can have that plate mail, and you can have that dagger, and you can eventually wear that plate mail down to where the plate mail is not there anymore. It's going to take you a long time, but you can effectively beat through armor in Palladium, which is nice. But if you roll over the armor class, then you find a hole in the armor, and you do damage to the person. You avoid the armor. So Palladium does this pretty well. And then we jump forward a little bit further to 1986, and we find Night of the Ninja, which is a Canadian role-playing game. And in Night of the Ninja, where you're playing ninjas in the 80s, basically replicates all those wonderful 80s ninja movies. That does kind of like Into the Odd and Tunnels and Trolls, in that you automatically hit. You don't really have an attack roll. So you do. You have what's called a strike roll in that game. So when two opponents are fighting, they each roll d10. If one opponent's higher level, they get to add their level to that roll. The winner of that roll-off does damage to the loser. That roll is the attack, the defense, all that stuff rolled up into one. And then a higher level character gets to add they do damage according to their weapon type, not the difference in the roll, but they get to add their level to the damage as well. Now, what happens in Night of the Ninja with multiple opponents, you can eventually get to the point where you have dual weapon control and you can like parry and attack or attack twice. Well, if you have dual weapon control, you can fight two people at once. But if you have more opponents than you have actions, and you're only really ever going to have two, you're automatically going to be hit by that third opponent or fourth opponent.
and you just take damage from it. So you can very, even a high-level ninja can be overwhelmed by enough opponents. Now, there are other things they can do in that game to get out of those situations because, well, it's a ninja game. But Night of the Ninja kind of does this as well. So these older games do incorporate some of these same ideas. So it's not the whole idea, like you're talking about, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. That kind of issue has been, people have been aware of it since the very beginning of the hobby, and different people have addressed it different ways. The way you're approaching it is probably closest to something like what Palladium's doing, where you have armor that absorbs damage, you have a really low threshold to hit, you might hit the armor, you might bypass the armor. So, you know, of course, Palladium's about to do their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Kickstarter, so I'll plug that. If you want to copy that game, they're about to kickstart and reprint that. Actually, they're not reprinting it. They're totally relaying it out. They're fixing some rules stuff in there. They're not changing the rules, but they're making things clearer, things like that. But anyway, it is interesting, and I'm very curious to hear the results of your testing of it. And so I look forward to your future episodes where you talk about your one-on-one, or hopefully get somebody in your group to do some combats with you and see how it goes. Very, very cool. I'm very happy that you're on the air, and I will talk to you soon. Thank you for OSR October, even if you ended it with a non-OSR musing. Take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Jason, thanks for that message. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you kind of walking us through various approaches that game designers have taken to the problem I see. And it's Jason and I emailed back and forth a little bit, and I talked about how he has a much broader base of experience with different game systems and their approaches. I've maybe played a dozen games, enough to really have an opinion, an educated opinion about how they play. And many of those games were things I played 30 plus years ago. So my recent game experience has been almost exclusively classic D&D, 5e D&D, and Savage Worlds. I haven't really played much besides those things since I got back into gaming. I guess we played a little bit of Warhammer 40K too, and DCC. I never played these games that you were talking about, Tunnels and Trolls. I know it's been around forever. I've never owned it, never played it, never read the rules. Likewise, Palladium Fantasy. I had Beyond the Supernatural, one of the Palladium games, but we never played it. I read it, but again, that was ages ago. And Night of the Ninja, I've never played or read. But it's, those are kind of some interesting approaches and things that you mention about how these different games tried to address the same thing. I'm kind of, and this is not a new thought I've had, and I realize it's not any kind of novel approach. There's probably been people out there that have done almost something almost identical to what I'm noodling about. The Tunnels and Troll thing, it almost sounds like, and this is another approach I've thought about taking from time to time, almost like an old CRT, a combat results table from wargaming, where you're measuring the attack factor versus the defense factor, finding that column on a table, rolling a die, and applying the results. And that could be, you know, defend or retreat, an exchange where both sides take damage, the defender takes a step loss or is completely eliminated. And depending on the odds, I mean, the attacker can have things that affecting them as well. And I mean, I've thought about doing that, but there's just a lot more variables in general. A lot of those CRTs are for like a strategic level game. So they're talking about like divisional level and up or something. But so in a single combatant kind of system like D&D, there's just, I think, a lot more variables involved with the experience, the weapon type, the armor they're wearing, et cetera, the attributes that they have. So using that approach might not work so well, but it's interesting having damage occur and you just roll to see which side takes the damage in a round. But like you say, the death spiral thing, while it appeals to me from my simulationist point of view, I know from experience that it's not a very fun way to game either, because once you do find yourself circling the drain, you quickly just like, well, what's the point? And depending on how steep that spiral is or how quickly you enter the drain, can really, dampen your enthusiasm and stuff. So I don't know. I tend to dislike the death spiral kind of games. So I don't really want to have that in mind. Plus, it usually involves more information tracking than I find most players want to partake in. And I think that sounds like what might be the biggest issue with the Palladium system as you describe it. If you're tracking how much armor how much damage your armor has absorbed, and then you have no protection or something, I think that might be, I suppose it's, you know, it's not much different than ticking off hit points. You just have two different totals that you're ticking off. It does seem a little peculiar though, that you're like pecking away at your armor and then suddenly it's just in shreds and then it just falls off or something. That seems a little bit bizarre. I mean, I can totally see armor degrading, but it seems like it would take quite a while before it would provide no protection whatsoever. So, I mean, I could see where there's gaps or something or a chink that people could exploit, but then the defender would probably just try and protect that area more. I don't know. I'm no sword master or anything like that or expert on medieval combat, but I suppose, like, you know, RuneQuest and Stormbringer and stuff have interesting approaches too, and having things like parry and attack percentages and stuff. But to me, not having played those games much, it seems like that would even be more of a Rock'em Sock'em Robots kind of thing than D&D. The difference being that when you are hit, you're far more likely to just go down from one hit than you are in D&D, at least beyond like first level or something D&D. So I've always felt like, even though I like the approach those games are, I don't know how well they play at the table. Again, having only a very limited exposure to them. Stormbringer in particular has kind of an interesting approach, which is a little different from the RuneQuest I remember, in that Stormbringer has a variable damage absorption. So while Plate has, I think, a D10 of damage that the armor reduces, it still could just reduce one hit point. And Leather, I think, is like a D6 minus one. So you could have 0 to 5 for Leather. And I think if you wear a helmet with Plate, it's like a D10 plus two or something. But it's an interesting approach. Knight of the Ninja also sounds kind of interesting with that, you know, difference between the rolls and adding your level difference. I'd like to hear more about that and how, like, so the roll, like if you've got a fifth level ninja fighting a zero level mook, I don't know if there's zero level or whatever. So presumably the ninja would be rolling a D10 plus 5 because he's 5 levels higher. So say the difference is 6 after the rolls. Does that put you on a different column for weapon damage, or do you add that number to the damage you do? I don't know. It's an interesting approach. But what I'm really digging at here is, I know there's all kinds of different games that I could play that would maybe tackle the problem I see in classic D&D combat. But what I'm trying to do is what the old arms law claw law did. It was just a combat system that you could replace the combat system in D&D with and keep everything else. So you don't really have to learn a whole new game and have whole new monsters, and you can still use all your old scenarios and supplements and all that. That's what I'd like to have. I just want to replace, you know, the combat system with something that makes a little bit more sense to me. Whereas Arms Law Claw Law, I don't think it really worked. It worked great in Rollmaster, but to try and just plug it into D&D, it didn't really work. You'd have people going down all the time in it because they just didn't. And I don't remember. Maybe they did have a conversion chart where you're like doubled the hit points or something that people had. But I mean, my God, the amount of damage you'd do with some of those hits and in Rollmaster would just blow up a typical BX character. So I don't know if that would. It didn't seem. We tried it and it didn't seem to work. But again, we tried it when we were 15 or something, or 16. So who knows if we actually implemented it how the books told you to. But my goal is to just have this simple combat system replace the simple combat system in D&D. And the thing that comes closest to it is what was in the old Bard games, Arcanum, where you just had an attack roll of 11 plus hit anyone and armor absorb damage. So, I mean, that works. This is similar to that, but I'm just having it 5 plus, and I'm having, So, whether I'm, like I said in the previous episode, whether it really will change the way combat flows in the game, or the end result, still needs to be play tested. And I haven't even talked to the guys in my group about this at all yet. I don't know if they listened to the episode. They haven't brought it up. I don't know if it's something I'd try to implement in Planet Eris or something. I think I'd just wait until I start another game, and whether I just play Into the Odd or try to implement this into a BX game, I don't know. But yeah, if they're interested in trying it, it wouldn't be hard to just plug it in, because that's why I want, right? I just want this replacement that flows seamlessly. So I don't think it would be difficult at all to implement it, but I just don't know if they want to have the game potentially affected by this pretty big rule change. They might want to just say, oh, let's just keep playing the way we're playing, and try it in the next game you run or something, which would be fine. But I am going to do a couple solo run-throughs with the total realization that it being a swingy game, I'd have to run, you know, thousands of encounters to really figure out how it truly works. You know, I suppose if I had advanced mathematical ability, I could run some kind of simulation or probabilities and stuff like that and find out with some formula and calculation whether this is really a big change or not. How it actually flows might be harder to measure, but I'll just do my ham-fisted best and make up a small party of adventurers and have them tackle different obstacles and have the results kind of as in-game or as I'm rolling these things round by round, maybe say, all right, this is the results, how it would be into the box, and here's how it would turn out if we were just using classic D&D rules, and see how the ebb and flow really changes from round to round. I don't know. Does that sound interesting? And anyone else that may have some thoughts on this, if you've tried it, if you have suggestions on how to tweak it or where I might be overlooking something, yeah, or just have an opinion on whether you think I'm misguided even trying to do it. Yeah, drop me a line. You can reach me at my email account. It's bigbalboni@gmail.com. Don't send me anything on Discord because I'm not going to see it, at least for a while. Maybe I think the only solution at this point is to just blow it up, to delete the app from my phone and try and sign it, or, you know, reload it and sign on as a completely different user, in which case I'm going to lose everything I had before and any messages that people sent me in the meantime. But I've updated all the software on my phone. I don't know what the hell's going on with it. It just doesn't recognize the fact that I'm not a bot. And I've tried going through super slowly when I'm selecting the images. It's just infuriating. And I'm done with it at this point. I'm so fed up with it. I don't even want to do it. So in the meantime, if you do want to contact me, do it via email, bigbalboni@gmail.com, and I'll play your message on the air. All right, that's it for me. I've droned on too long to really have the playtest part of this episode. I'm off the next 2 days, and even though I've got a mountain of yard work to do, and it's going to be nice out, I'll try to do at least one little playtest or something in those 2 days. So, but until I talk to you then, thanks for listening. Don't go down in a heap.